Dear founders and listeners, this is O Chang. Welcome to my new podcast program, Chatsu, C-H-A-T-S-U, Chinese History and Tech Startups, where we draw lessons from history to chart our own future. Today, I want to talk about one of the biggest problems faced by early stage startup founders when they just started the company, which is to hire the early team. How difficult it is to form a team in its company's early stages. A lot of investors, a lot of seasoned entrepreneurs always say, a company is as good as people. It's all about the people and the team. And Silicon Valley literature talks frequently about culture fit and how to form a culture. But it rarely speaks about how should a founder court their early employees when they try and form a team with nothing. This is where I think Chinese history actually provides invaluable insights. Today, I'd like to talk specifically about the learnings during the Three Kingdoms period during the late Han Dynasty. Specifically, it is the story of the three visits to the humble hut, San Gu Mao Lu, where one of the most famous warlords, Liu Bei, visits his military strategist, Zhuge Liang, to invite him out of Xiangyang, his hometown, to join him in building up his kingdom. I will also weave in some thoughts about how I think Jack Ma actually uses this strategy very well to court very talented people like Li Ying and Zhou Cai in his career. So, as a start, as a historical context, we are talking about the late Han Dynasty now, which is towards about 2,000 years from today. The emperor has been held political hostage by Cao Cao, who's quite a famous warlord. Cao Cao has established himself to be the strongest warlord in northern China during this period of time after he has just defeated a bigger warlord named Yuan Shao. In short, he is the de facto leader of China then, but he hasn't styled himself to be emperor. He inherited the entire administrative bureaucracy and talents from the Han Dynasty. So, from a startup point of view, you can understand Cao Cao's camp as the incumbent. They are the market big boy. Although, there's one small problem. They are seen as illegitimate because Cao Cao has the reputation of being that rebel that holds the emperor hostage. He's not the legitimate leader that's ruling with government's will. Then I'd like to introduce a second camp during the Three Kingdoms period on the other side of the Yangtze River. That is the Wu Kingdom ruled by the Sun family. They are technically another startup, just a more mature one, as the Sun family has been on this side of the Yangtze River for about three generations. They are blessed and protected with very good natural resources. They're protected by the Yangtze River, so attacks from the north becomes difficult. And most importantly, people say there are talents in the Wu Kingdom. So you can imagine the Wu Kingdom, ruled by the Sun family, to be well-stocked by an army of McKinsey consultants who are equipped with the best AI algorithms as a startup. It is a smaller outfit than Cao Cao, but still a force to be reckoned with. And then we come to the protagonist of today's episode, Liu Bei. So a little bit of background of Liu Bei here. Liu Bei, he is rumored to be a distant relative of the Han Dynasty because he shares the same surname, Liu. He grew up very poor. He was said to be estranged from the royal family, and he actually grew up selling straw shoes, shoes made from straws. During this period of time, Liu Bei actually has a small influence and quite a good street cred. But nevertheless, he is the super underdog, a pseudo royalty with an extremely small army, some resources, but virtually nothing but a good reputation. He doesn't have a very large following and probably do not have the resources just like the Sun family or like Cao Cao. All he had as generals were his two sworn brothers, Zhang Fei and Guan Yu, who are famous fighters, who are brave, And all three of them are looking for the opportunity to start up their own empire. So this is the historical context we are talking about here. Liu Bei is the super underdog, and he is actually at the stage of the startup founder, which I call the chicken and egg conundrum. He doesn't have resources. He's unable to appeal to let talents show themselves because of the lack of resources. But because he doesn't have the talents, this also caused a problem for him in accumulating resources. He needs to break out of that. And this is during this period of time, he heard of a talent called, nicknamed the Sleeping Dragon of Xiangyang, Mr. Zhuge Liang. He has been told by some of Cao Cao's advisors that as long as either you have Mr. Sleeping Dragon or you have Mr. Phoenix, another talent, having one of them will help you conquer the world. Liu Bei became very impressed after he heard of this person called Mr. Sleeping Dragon, and he found out where he lived and decided to pay him a visit. When he visited Zhuge Liang the first time, he stood at the door and introduced himself as the distant imperial uncle of the Han Dynasty. This was actually against social norms, because Liu Bei, being a small warlord himself, you can think of him as actually the interviewer, the startup founder who is trying to interview an incoming early stage team member. So instead of asking the interviewee questions, Liu Bei starts off by introducing himself, introducing his own family background, his vision, and why did he visit Zhuge Liang. In ancient China, that is absolutely against social norms. And that actually infuriated Liu Bei's two brothers, Guan Yu and Zhang Fei, who felt that Zhuge Liang was being disrespectful to not come out to receive Liu Bei when they first visited him. But coincidentally, Liu Bei did the introduction and waited, not knowing that Zhuge Liang was actually not at home. So we need to be mindful here. 2000 years ago, there isn't a Google Calendar, there's no Calendly, and there's absolutely no WhatsApp. It's almost impossible to catch a person at a place at the correct time. It is difficult to arrange for a meeting with Zhuge Liang. So Liu Bei returned home after not being able to find Zhuge Liang after the first visit. But again, let's talk about social norms. Zhuge Liang ought to have followed up with Liu Bei upon knowing that Liu Bei came to visit him, but there was no follow-up. And some time passed before Liu Bei decided to visit Zhuge Liang a second time, and this time during a harsh winter. So he traveled all the way to Zhuge Liang's place during winter when it was snowing. And again, Zhuge Liang wasn't home. He was actually out having fun with his friends, having a staycation. You know, back in those days when transport is inconvenient, it is as good as a COVID lockdown. So again, during the second time, Zhuge Liang wasn't home, and the three brothers have to retreat without having the chance to speak to the legendary Mr. Sleeping Dragon. And when Liu Bei decided to visit Zhuge Liang again for the third time, his two brothers were extremely furious already. They felt that Zhuge Liang may not be as impressive as his reputation makes him sound, and they think that he's actually being very disrespectful. Their ego prevented them from moving forward with this interview candidate. So Liu Bei convinced them, the two of them, that they ought to visit Zhuge Liang for the third time and try their luck to see if he's around. And good luck actually bestowed upon them, Zhuge Liang was actually in. But there's another small problem. Zhuge Liang was actually taking a nap. The arrogant brothers of Liu Bei, Guan Yu and Zhang Fei, decided to barge into Zhuge Liang's house, wake him up so that he can have a meeting with Liu Bei. But Liu Bei actually stopped them from doing so and waited very respectfully outside Zhuge Liang's home to wait for him to wake up before they chatted. Liu Bei waited to 2 to 4 hours before Zhuge Liang woke up and had one of the most famous chats during the Three Kingdoms period where Zhuge Liang showed Liu Bei his strategy on how to make Liu Bei a force to be reckoned with. And they embark on an interesting journey together as a small startup to become one of the three most powerful forces during the Three Kingdoms period back then. So, the first lesson on how did Liu Bei manage to convince Mr. Sleeping Dragon to leave his hometown Xiangyang to join him as an underdog during the Three Kingdoms period. So I think the first lesson is that all startup founders must know what is our position. That's the first lesson in the overall context. And in Liu Bei's case, Liu Bei now needed an execution plan. He needed a strategy on how to take on the world, especially in his chicken and egg conundrum where he doesn't have enough military resources nor financial resources. He needs to find the advisor, the founding team member, to kickstart the battle with him. In short, Liu Bei had no money, no army, and no strategy. He needs to break out of that. And what did Liu Bei do? Liu Bei broke out of social norms, because I think that's a very important fact that's seldom mentioned when people share about this three visits to the humble hut, San Gu Mao Lu story. In that, Zhuge Liang was only in his late 20s when Liu Bei visited him. But Liu Bei was already in his late 40s when he started up his venture as a startup founder. So you can imagine what Liu Bei did as a 48-year-old to an untested, unproven, a person without work experience like Zhuge Liang in his late 20s was extremely out of the social norm. But his humility and sincerity touched Zhuge Liang, and Zhuge Liang shared with him all his thoughts, strategies on how to take on the world upon seeing Liu Bei's sincerity. But let's also think about Liu Bei's positioning and where he stood. At 48, in ancient China, that's considered very, very old already. And back then, he still had nothing. As I said, no money, no army, no strategy. He was really looking for a breakthrough, and he honestly didn't really have a choice. He really had to gamble on Zhuge Liang and really go all in just in order to get him. There is really no time and no resources, no time to waste. So he had to go into such a, I would say, an extreme positioning vis-a-vis Zhuge Liang in courting him as a talent. So that is the first position. Liu Bei knew his own position, and he actually coordinated his acts accordingly thereafter. And I think this is the conventional sharing for the San Gu Mao Lu story in Chinese history. But personally, I think there's a second dimension which I think startup founders should take note of when it comes to hiring the early team, forming the early team. And that is to understand what is the talent thinking and what is the talent's position. So in this case, from Chinese history, what is Zhuge Liang's position then? As I mentioned, Zhuge Liang was only 28 or 29 then. He needed a platform. He had a reputation of being a sleeping dragon, but I'm not too sure where that platform came from, because Zhuge Liang was basically an unproven young man. And in those circumstances then, Cao Cao inherited the whole imperial court of the Han Dynasty. Most of the scholars and the mandarins, the top-tier military advisors, were mostly in Cao Cao's camp. And those that were in Sun Quan's camp had been with Sun Quan's family for three generations. They were all very loyal. So, as a young man, if Zhuge Liang were to join the incumbent or the strong startup in Sun Quan's camp, it is very unlikely he will be the number one driver if he were to join them. He will probably be number 7 in Cao Cao's camp or number 3 to 5 in Sun Quan's camp. His best bet then was Liu Bei, somebody who had the ambition to take on the world but did not have enough to start up. Somebody who would trust him, somebody who would let him be in the driving seat to show his talents. So Zhuge Liang also needed to choose properly. And there's actually some thoughts saying that Zhuge Liang deliberately made it difficult for Liu Bei to see him so that he knows how badly Liu Bei wants him and how possible is he in becoming the prime minister for Liu Bei. This is rarely spoken about, but I think this is actually an extremely important angle for startup founders to consider. Is the talent you are courting somebody who wants to take a risk with you so that you can provide them with the platform, or are they just talented but looking for a safe place to work? If they are the latter, it is likely people would join a more established startup like Grab, like Gojek, and may not join your startup in carving out new grounds with you. So knowing the person, the interviewee's psyche and position is, I think, the second lesson for most startup founders. The third lesson, I think, is that upon knowing your own position and the interviewee's position, the startup founder needs to know, what is my special stroke? What is something so special that I need to do to persuade the person over? And in this case, Liu Bei's value proposition has always been very clear. Their company corporate identity is always about benevolence and brotherhood. Liu Bei, Guan Yu, Zhang Fei, these three brothers have been sticking to each other for a very long while. And they had a famous story, which is very famous in China back then, about how they swore into brotherhood in the Peach Garden upon knowing each other's ambitions and vision to restore the legitimate Han Dynasty under someone with the surname Liu, and in this case, Liu Bei. They even had a slogan for it. They called themselves Kuang Fu Han Shi, to legitimately restore the Han Dynasty royalty. And that is the vision and the cause that Liu Bei is selling to Zhuge Liang. Basically, his message to Zhuge Liang is, do you want to be part of the platform that can actually disrupt the current status quo? And if we win, you'll be in the pole position of becoming the prime minister of a legitimate Han Dynasty. That is actually very compelling for Zhuge Liang. And in addition to this very compelling value proposition, there's promise of autonomy, platform, and Liu Bei actually went out of the social norm to show respect to somebody 20 years his junior. That was Liu Bei's masterstroke in courting Zhuge Liang, Mr. Sleeping Dragon. In most recent times, I think the founder of Alibaba, Jack Ma, is somebody who's extremely well-read in Chinese history. In fact, most China startup founders make references to Chinese history very frequently. Chinese history is something that guides them in decision making and is actually in every startup founder's DNA. So let's talk about Alibaba and Jack Ma, who's extremely good with hiring. Earlier this year, I read an article on South China Morning Post, which shared about a very relatively unknown person known as Li Ying. Li Ying is actually Jack Ma's personal private equity arm's co-founder, Yunfeng Capital. Li Ying was 29 when Yunfeng Capital was founded in 2010. She was actually named one of the co-founders of Yunfeng Capital, and Jack Ma actually visited her in Silicon Valley 3 times to persuade her to go back to China to start Yunfeng Capital with him. Li Ying was educated in MIT in computer science and economics. She was previously from McKinsey and KBCB. Although she's relatively not as well known in the Western world, she's extremely famous in China. Her nickname in China was the female Buffett of China. So coincidence has it that when Li Ying co-founded Yunfeng Capital in 2010, she was actually 29. When Jack Ma visited her 3 times or so to start Yunfeng Capital. And then Jack Ma was also coincidentally 46. Sounds similar, isn't it? Zhuge Liang was also 29 and Liu Bei was 28. Another very interesting hire that Jack Ma made in the early days of starting up Alibaba was his partnership with Zhou Cai. As many of you may know, Jack Ma actually founded a company with his students, 18 of them, today known as the 18 Lohan, the 18 Arhats of Alibaba, the founders. And Zhou Cai was employee number 19 when he joined. But many said that Zhou Cai's joining of Alibaba in 1999 made a significant difference to the professionalization and the scale of the company. So a bit about Zhou Cai. Zhou Cai is a Canadian-Taiwanese. He studied law in Yale, was from a prestigious firm called Sullivan and Cromwell, and was part of the Swedish investment PE fund called AB Capital. He's the same age as Alibaba and was drawing a high pay as the managing director of the Swedish PE fund when he gave up his job to join Jack Ma to take up a monthly salary of 500 RMB a month. So as he recounted this story, he said, "Jack and I met in May 1999 and a friend told me, from Taiwan told me, 'Joe, you must meet this guy from Hangzhou. It's kind of crazy.' But he's actually on to big things by leveraging on the internet to level the playing field in the B2B business. Although Joe didn't really understand what exactly was internet B2B business about, he was very drawn to Jack. He went on to observe how Jack led his team, and he knew that basically the group of followers were all his students, and they were all students who learned English in universities, in university from Jack Ma. And he saw that these people were working hard. They were living together in an apartment in Hupan, in Hangzhou. They had a glimmer in their eyes. And Joe thought to himself, wow, this guy can really get people together. He's a great leader. And he can really build something. That compelled him to jump onto something risky. Then Zhou Cai did a second check to want to find out who are the original shareholders of this company. And what Jack Ma told him really surprised him. Jack Ma told him, all 18 of the people in the apartment who were all his students are considered founders from day one. Jack Ma gave away a very substantial part of his equity to the founding team. And to Zhou Cai, that is unique. He doesn't see it in other places, no other China founders who will actually keep a very high stake to themselves. That is the first special stroke that Jack Ma offered. The second special stroke that Jack Ma offered was to speak to Zhou Cai's wife, to assure him and to find out from her what are her views in her husband giving up a job in a prestigious PE fund to join him in Hangzhou for 500 RMB a month. Such a practice is absolutely unheard of in the Western world, but in China, there's a saying, if you want to do business with somebody, you need to convince the wife. So that's exactly what Jack Ma did over here. Jack Ma knew his position, that it was 1999. He was leading a bunch of his ex-students who were not professionally trained to take on a global market in terms of fundraising, dealing with professional institutions like Goldman and Masayoshi San. He needed somebody who knew, and the person was Zhou Cai. He also understood Zhou Cai's position. Zhou Cai was actually looking for his breakthrough in his career. And at 35, both of them were 35, Zhou Cai was looking for the next big thing to expand his career. And Jack had to advance with a special stroke. He shared how he dealt with his students, the 18 founders, and he actually reached out to speak to Zhou Cai's wife, which was a bit unexpected under those circumstances. And of course, for Jack and Joe, what happened after 1999, the rest is history, and we see Alibaba for what it is today. So, dear founders and listeners, let's recap. What did we learn from Liu Bei and Jack Ma today? A founder, especially an early stage founder, ought to, number one, know their own position in the overall scheme of things. Number two, understand the psychology and needs of the interviewee you're courting in joining your startup. And lastly, we need to ask ourselves as founders, we need a magic stroke. What is our magic stroke? Dear listeners, dear founders, what's yours? Till the next episode on ChatSu, where we learn from history to chart our future. This is Ouchang. See you next time. Goodbye.